Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Krepko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. Silk Road Summit, connecting the world. China will host a major Silk Road Summit in the middle of this month to discuss its myriad connectivity projects across the world. Turkey versus Syrian Kurds, round two. Roughly a month after concluding Operation Euphrates Shield, Turkey seems primed to launch another anti-Kurdish campaign in northern Syria. And also, Macedonia, Greater Albania rises. The recent actions of the pro-Albanian opposition and the Republic of Macedonia have renewed the years-old Balkan fear that foreign powers are trying to create Greater Albania by hook or by crook. Opening up this week's edition of Trendstorm is China's upcoming Silk Road Summit. China will host a major Silk Road Summit in the middle of this month to discuss its myriad connectivity projects across the world. A bevy of world leaders are expected to attend, first and foremost among them, Russian President Vladimir Putin. And the function will allow Chinese President Xi to showcase his One Belt, One Road global vision of new Silk Road infrastructural integration. Officially announced in 2013 during the Chinese leaders' visits to Kazakhstan and Indonesia, OBOR, as it's colloquially called, seeks to construct the groundwork for an alternative world system based less on the dominance of Western countries and institutions and more on win-win cooperation between equal partners. China believes that improved connectivity is the key to maximizing every state's options in the ever-changing 21st century globalized world, and that with time, the parallel multipolar institutions that rise out of this emerging order and are strengthened by it could ultimately replace the unipolar system. The vehicle of change being pursued by China is infrastructural investment, commonly manifested by what the public calls New Silk Roads, and a few prominent projects stand out as the centerpiece of this vision. The largest and most important one is inarguably the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, or CPEC, which will provide the People's Republic with its first reliable non-Malacca access route to the Indian Ocean, and from there, the markets of Europe, the Mideast, and Africa. Of similar importance but much less developed is the Eurasian Land Bridge, which aims to connect East Asia with Western Europe by means of a series of high-speed railways transiting through Russia. Also of significance are China's high-speed rail plans for ASEAN and linking the Yunnan capital of Kunming with Singapore. And the recently completed Djibouti-Addis Ababa Railway in East Africa is another relevant example. We also shouldn't forget the Balkan Silk Road, which envisions connecting the Hungarian capital of Budapest with the Greek port of Piraeus via Belgrade and Skopje. China's Silk Road plans are very ambitious, and as President Xi alluded to during his January speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos, they essentially amount to an updated version of globalization meant to counteract the recent trend of protectionism. That being said, there's no escaping the profound geostrategic implications of this worldwide system of new Silk Roads, and it's clear that OBOR presents a serious challenge to the Western-led international order. So to start off our discussion today, we're joined by Mr. Tom McGregor. He's a commentator and editor at CNTV, which is China Network Television.
Trendstorm.
All right, Tom, the upcoming meeting is accompanied by a lot of pomp and circumstance, seeing as how it's pretty much the global unveiling of the OBOR vision. But what sort of tangible outcomes do you expect from it?
Well, some of the tangible outcomes that I see is that it's possible we may have more countries signing on to the Belt and Road and AIIB, which is the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. So I anticipate that you're going to see a lot more stronger support for it, and that China is going to be able to give its full explanation for what's going on and also addressing these suspicions or concerns that other countries may have.
Okay, you know, we know that China used to have an inward-looking economy for most of the Cold War while the U.S. was a globalizing superpower, but now, Tom, I mean, the roles appear to have flipped. China is promoting globalization through OBOR, while the U.S. is dabbling in protectionism under Trump. So what do you make out of this reversal?
To me, it's more of a philosophical move. The Chinese are big-time followers of what's known as Sun Tzu's Art of War. And what that philosophy is a lot, it's about surprising people or being unpredictable. So that if everyone is doing one thing, should probably do the opposite to fight against the current trend so you can take a leadership role. So right now, there's a tendency now towards more nationalism, towards their country first, and people are moving away from globalism. So in response, China is just trying to do the opposite take so that when others are running away from globalism, they support globalism. And then what happens from there is that eventually, if globalism becomes popular again, then China will be one of the premier leaders of the globalist movement. So this is just basically a way for China to take a much more bigger role in world affairs in the future.
Okay, yeah, this is pretty interesting, Tom. I want to ask you this, since we're on this topic about comparing and contrasting the U.S. and China's global visions. Do you anticipate any sort of friction arising between Beijing's recent embrace of globalization and Washington's use of protectionism? Do you think that this can create some problems in the future?
Well, of course, it's going to create some tensions on the trade side because China has been a major beneficiary of globalism. China has been a major beneficiary of the U.S. Prior move towards globalism because a lot of people were buying a lot of made-in-China products. So with the current movement in the USA, this what's known as the America First, led by Trump, you're going to see more China's a little bit concerned about that. So, of course, there'll be some problems, but at the same time, China also has to figure out a way to adapt. They've been too successful on the manufacturing side that now labor costs have increased a lot in China. And also, it's no longer as profitable to be a major manufacturing base for cheap goods. So they have to now focus on more innovations, better technology, so that when they do sell their goods abroad, it will have a strong appeal to the buyers. So in a sense, they will complain, but it actually works to China's benefit with this new change because it forces China to basically improve the products they export abroad.
Hey, we're joined by Mr. Tom McGregor. He's a commentator and editor at CNTV, which is China Network Television. Okay, you know, I also read your recent article, Tom, about New Silk Roads and, you know, about the promise that it holds. And I noticed that, you know, you spoke about a CPEC, you know, China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. And this is, of course, as we know, the flagship program of the Belt and Road Initiative. And through our conversation, you also touched upon that there might be some tensions with trade between different partners and got me thinking about India. I mean, this is China's neighbor. It's a huge market economy, 1 billion people, but it's not really participating in the Belt and Road Initiative. So do you have any comments on that, maybe?
You know, India is also an India firster. So he wants to make India strong. He believes that if China becomes much stronger or succeeds, that this may not be so helpful to India. So a lot of times when I analyze international situations, I kind of put myself in the mind of whoever is involved in decision making. So if I was to be Modi and I'm focusing on an India first platform, then yeah, I can understand why he's a little bit reluctant to support the Belt and Road and then to sort of spread the word that it may cause problems or create suspicions because he wants to make India strong and he wants to create a situation where more people are supportive of India instead of China. However, this is an incorrect approach because the Belt and Road can benefit so many countries and it can also benefit India as well if they just simply look at it as an economic perspective and try not to think too much about the politics of it.
Yeah, I mean, the Belt and Road is definitely a win-win. Well, the last thing I want to ask you then, Tom, is do you think there's any possibility of the U.S. and India, I mean, since you said they're kind of led by India first and U.S. first politicians, are them kind of trying to team up to, in a way, obstruct the Belt and Road Initiative?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I've noticed a lot of talk about Trump, even here from China, you hear a lot about Trump. But I've heard very little about any alliances between India and the U.S. in recent months. I've heard very little news about if there's going to be a meeting between Modi and Trump or any type of economic alliances. I've had the opportunity to talk to a few Indian people here in China, and they said that a lot of the Indians really do love Modi. But when I asked them about Trump, they're a little bit reluctant to say anything about ties between the U.S. and India. So what I anticipate is the Indian-U.S. ties, if they do grow stronger, it's going to be very complicated.
Okay, Tom. Well, thanks for sharing these fascinating observations with us. I think you have a really deep insight on this topic, and I was happy you were able to come on our program today. Thank you so much. Now we're going to switch over, since we were just speaking about CPEC, we're going to speak to Taya Baloch. He's an Islamabad-based regional security expert, writer at geopolitica.ru, and reporter at Optok TV to tell us more about the flagship program and everything else related to the Silk Road.
Trendstorm.
All right, Taya, how viable are China's plans to construct a worldwide system of new Silk Road connectivity, and what scenarios could potentially arise to offset its prospects for successfully doing so?
In fact, awakening of Chinese giant shocked the Western world as the rise of China considers the most important development of 21st century, despite the American traps about countering China. Since World War II to till date, China, under the leadership of Communist Party, looms very large on the horizon by shunning American game plan. Although there is always a propaganda against rapidly growing Chinese economy in global media, but truth is that fastest growth of Chinese economy provided opportunity to China to share economic benefits with world nations. In fact, the rising of modern China encouraged Chinese leadership to revive ancient silk trade routes with modern infrastructures of railroads and seaports. Firstly, in 2013, the Chinese President Xi Jinping presented his vision to reveal modern Silk Road Economic Belt and the 21st century Maritime Silk Road, together known as One Belt, One Road, along with Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank and Silk Road Fund. Chinese Communist Party dedicated all efforts to make China great again with peaceful development by exploring ancient Chinese trade routes with the rest of the world. While the pages of history also tell that China has enjoyed maritime superpower in 15th century by controlling all maritime routes of Silk Road passing through Muslim world. In fact, the Chinese imperial explorer Zheng He led seven ocean expeditions for Ming Empire that are unmatched in world history. Presently, China, under the leadership of Xi Jinping, has got significant success to make China great again as maritime superpower. For this purpose, China has already established naval bases outside the country. After getting the control of Balochistan's Gwadar port as the part of China-Pakistan economic corridor, Beijing appeared as dominant maritime power not only in Indian Ocean, but it also got a strategic opportunity to link up the key trade routes of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, and the Europe with its military base of Djibouti to protection purposes. China is very ambitious to build crisscrossing bridges in Eurasia from Belarus to Pakistan, aim to connect all Eurasian seaports with Belt Road land routes with the help of multipolar institutions. This new Eurasian economic strategy is reshaping the global trade. No doubt that Chinese plan to reveal ancient Silk Road for global trade has become most ambitious economic and diplomatic program since the founding of the modern China. It is also can view the alternative scheme of the East to complete the Western economic treaties of Rome. For this purpose, China has introduced win-win scenario for Silk Road countries from Asia to Africa, including Latin America, so that old trade routes would be modernized in the new era of development. In fact, China knows to play with the time. When the West is falling apart due to failures of the treaties of Rome, China is building the East by providing the world's largest platform of Belt Road for regional collaboration.
Okay, well, what I want to ask you then, Ty, is you brought up CPEC, and of course, India isn't too happy with that because it claims that it runs through territory that it believes is its own. So how does India's intransigence to China's initiative complicate OBOR's implementation?
Yes, you are absolutely right about Indian unhappiness with Chinese Belt Road projects. There are many reasons. First, as the traditional rival, India cannot digest easily such mega Chinese-led projects in its surroundings and Asia. While the CPEC is like a salt on Indian wounds because India considers Pakistan as its enemy and it cannot afford Pakistan's significant upcoming development under the CPEC project. Therefore, it is not only chosen to make it disputed, but it also adopted to sabotage it by claiming Gilgit-Baltistan as its own territory, while fact is different because that territory belongs to Pakistan. In fact, the West, to counter rising East, has invested on Modi's India. Therefore, India is towing Western game plan in Asia to hurdles intended to block Chinese initiatives in the region. New Delhi with pro-West Kabul government is not only trying to destabilize Pakistan, even they are also working to fuel hostility to disturb Chinese initiatives in Central Asia and in South Asia. With the help of Western partners, India is seeking to compete China in Asia. Recent Indian moves in Bangladesh and in Sri Lanka against Chinese interests are hinted that India is the troublemaker in the implementation of OBR, Belt Road initiatives. While through Indo-Pacific Rim Game, India has ambitions to block Chinese trade routes via Bay of Bengal, and to counter growing influence of China in Indian oceans. In short, Indian footprints against China can easily unearth from Asia to Africa.
All right, Tayyip, thanks a lot for this. As always, I'm very happy to have you on my show. Thank you.
Take care.
Trendstorm.
Now, if we think about what Tom and Tayyip spoke about today, we can see that, I mean, China is trying to revolutionize the world through a tweaked version of globalization, adapted to multipolarity, and through win-win partnerships founded on infrastructural investment. And the flagship program for this is CPEC. However, this has created some issues with the U.S. and especially India. But at the end of the day, the projects roll on. As they say, the caravan continues and the dogs keep barking. But it would be great if everyone can get involved on CPEC and other new Silk Road projects, because the world can only benefit because of it. So, folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about the new Silk Roads, the upcoming summit, and even CPEC, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.